რადიო თავისუფლება FM 107.4.
საქართველოში 14 საათია. მოისმინეთ ახალი ამბების გამოშვება. მას მარიამ ჭიაურელი გაგაცნობთ. ჯერ თავარი ახალი ამბები მოკლედ. ფიზიკის დარგში ნობელის პრემიის წლევანდელი ლაურეატები არიან იაპონელი მეცნიერები. სირიის ქალაქ კობანეში ებრძვიან ისლამური სახელმწიფოს ექსტრემისტებს. უკრაინის პრეზიდენტი შეუძლებლად მიიჩნევს მშვიდობას დონბასში რუსეთთან საზღვარზე კონტროლის აღდგენის გარეშე. ჟენევაში იწყება უსაფრთხოების საკითხებისადმი მიძღვნილი საერთაშორისო დისკუსიის მორიგი რაუნდი. ახლა ეს და სხვა ახალი ამბები უფრო ვრცლად. რამდენიმე წუთის წინ ცნობილი გახდა ფიზიკის დარგში ნობელის პრემიის წლევანდელი ლაურეატების ვინაობა. პრემია მიენიჭა სამ იაპონელ მეცნიერს. მათ საქმიანობას უკავშირდება დიოდური ან ლედ ნათურების გამოგონება. სირიელი ქურთების ქალაქ კობანეში მიმდინარეობს ბრძოლა ქურთ მეომრებსა და ისლამური სახელმწიფოს წევრ ექსტრემისტებს შორის. მანამდე კვირას ექსტრემისტებმა დაიპყრეს სტრატეგიულად მნიშვნელოვანი პოზიციები კობანის აღმოსავლეთით მდებარე გარეუბნებთან. ამასობაში ექსტრემისტებმა წინ წაიწიეს სირიელი ქურთების ქალაქი სამხრეთისა და დასავლეთისკენ და ფაქტიურად კონტროლი დაამყარეს გარეუბნებზე კობანის სამი მიმართულებით. კობანი თურქეთთან საზღვრის მახლობლად მდებარეობს. საზღვრიდან კორესპონდენტები უწყებიან, რომ თურქიის სამხედროები კობანელ ქურთ დევნილებს არ აძლევენ თურქეთის ტერიტორიაზე შესვლის საშუალებას. თვითმხილველების მონათხრობზე დაყრდნობითი უწყებიან ასევე, რომ წუხელ საჰარო ირიში განახორციელეს შეერთებული შტატების და მისი მოკავშირეების საბრძოლო თვითმფრინავებმა. მაგრამ სირიელი ქურთი მიამბოხეები ამბობენ, რომ საჰარო იერიშებს არ შეუჩერებია ექსტრემისტების იერიშები. უკრაინის პრეზიდენტი პეტრო პოროშენკო შეუძლებლად მიიჩნევს მშვიდობას დონბასში რუსეთთან საზღვარზე კონტროლის გარეშე. ამ საკითხზე პოროშენკო მისაუბრა შეერთებული შტატების სახელმწიფო მდივნის მოადგილე ვიქტორია ნულანთან კიევში შეხვედრისას. პოროშენკოს თქმით, აუცილებელია უკრაინელ მესაზღვრებს მიეცეთ საშუალება დაბრუნდნენ რუსეთთან საზღვრის ყველა მონაკვეთზე. ამასთან პოროშენკო შიშობს, რომ აღმოსავლეთ უკრაინაში რაიონებს, რომლებსაც რუსეთის მომხრე სეპარატისტები აკონტროლებენ, ზამთარში ჰუმანიტარული კატასტროფა ემუქრებათ, თუ არაფერი გაკეთდება ამჟამინდელი ვითარების შესაცვლელად. რუსეთის პრეზიდენტმა ვლადიმირ პუტინმა ხელი მოაწერა კანონს, რომელიც გძალავს ღამით დემონსტრაციების ჩატარებას. შეკრებების, მიტინგების, დემონსტრაციების, მსვლელობებისა და პიკეტირების შესახებ კანონში შეტანილი ცვლილებებით დაშვებული არ არის საჯარო ღონისძიების ჩატარება დილის 7 საათამდე და 22 საათის შემდეგ. დაშვებულია გამონაკლისები ისტორიული თარიღების და კულტურული ღონისძიების ჩატარების შემთხვევაში. რუსეთის სახელმწიფო სათათბირო ეს კანონი 19 სექტემბერს მიიღო, რასაც მოხვა 1 ოქტომბერს მისი დამტკიცება ფედერაციის საბჭოს მიერ. ჟენევაში იწყება უსაფრთხოების საკითხებისადმი მიძღვნილი საერთაშორისო დისკუსიის 29 რაუნდი. საქართველოს საგარეო უწყების ინფორმაციით, თბილისის დელეგაცია ყურადღებას კვლავ გაამახვილებს ოკუპირებულ რეგიონებსა და მათ მიმდებარე რაიონებში უსაფრთხოებისა და ადამიანის უფლებათა მდგომარეობის მხრივ არსებულ რთულ ვითარებაზე. ჟენევის დისკუსიის 29 რაუნდზე ქართული მხარე კვლავ მოითხოვს, რომ რუსეთმა ძალის გამოუყენებლობის ვალდებულება აიღოს. თბილისის დელეგაცია აუცილებლად მიიჩნევს ოკუპირებულ ტერიტორიებზე უსაფრთხოების საერთაშორისო მექანიზმების ამუშავებასაც. საქართველოს დელეგაცია საგარეო საქმეთა მინისტრის პირველი მოადგილე დავით ზალკალიანი ხელმძღვანელობს. სომხეთის ეროვნული ასამბლეის თავმჯდომარე გალუს საჰაკიანის აზრით, საქართველოსთან სავაჭრო ურთიერთობის განვითარებას ხელს არ შეუშლის ის გარემოება, რომ სომხეთმა ერჩია ევრაზიის ეკონომიკურ კავშირში გაწევრიანება, ხოლო საქართველომ ხელი მოაწერა ევროკავშირთან ასოცირების და შესაბამისად ღრმა და ყოვლისმომცველი თავისუფალი ვაჭრობის შეთანხმებას. გალუს საჰაკიანმა ეს შეფასება გამოთქვა თბილისში საქართველოს პრეზიდენტთან გიორგი მარგველაშვილთან დღევანდელი შეხვედრისას. საჰაკიანის შეფასებით საქართველოსა და სომხეთის თანამშრომლობა იქცევა ხიდად ორ სავაჭრო ზონას შორის. და ბოლოს, უფლებათამცველი ორგანიზაცია Amnesty International დღეს ჩაატარებს ცნობილი რუსი ჟურნალისტის ანა პოლიტკოვსკას ხსოვნისადმი მიძღვნილ აქციას ყვავილები ანასთვის. დღეს 7 ოქტომბერს პოლიტკოვსკას მკვლელობის მორიგი წლისთავია. ეს იყო ახალი ამბების გამოშვება, ლაპარაკობს რადიო თავისუფლება.
Welcome to Roots and Branches on VOA Music Mix. I'm Catherine Cole in Washington. You are in for a treat today. I'm joined in the studio by a young guy who's just released his first official album. His name is Curtis McMurtry, and you might be familiar with his dad, singer-songwriter James McMurtry, who's been in the studio before. Maybe you've read one of the novels or nonfiction works written by his grandfather, Larry McMurtry. Well, Curtis has joined the family business. His debut disc is called Respectable Enemy. Why don't you play something for us, Curtis?
I saw you shining like a lighter in a foxhole, and without delay I put you in my sights. For many years I watched you dancing in my crosshairs, but I couldn't pull the trigger for my life. But then one day I got the stones to take your hand, dear, and I won you with a flower and a smile. Though all I had to offer was a fireplace and a face you learned to love after a while. Called to serve my country, and I went because I'd never been away. And I returned home with a bandage on my forehead and a memory that gets weaker every day. And now you never touch me like you used to, and my injuries don't even start to heal. And I was sure right then and there that I would lose you. Oh, how wretched your beauty makes me feel. And I used to think our love was but a trifle. I was surprised it lasted through the month of May. But now I am too old to lift my rifle, and you're still here to watch me waste away. My love, I've lost so many friends since we got married, and I know that you could say the same to me. I believe I was the first to ever catch you. Perhaps I should be the first to set you free. Shining like the sunlight through the window, and the truth had started slowly sinking in. And I knew when I walked out the door this morning, I would never see your pretty face again. So don't go searching for my body in the cattails. Just be happy that I've found a place to rest. And by the time you read this letter, I'll be gone, dear. You know I love you, but this is for the best. You know I love you, but this is for the best.
Curtis. Curtis McMurtry is in visiting today. His first CD, and I'm going to call it your first because this is the first one that you're really out.
I'm going to call it my first as well.
Okay. Respectable Enemy is the title of it. What's the name of that song?
Foxhole.
Talk about making a deep first impression. You came out pulling no punches with that one.
Yeah, the whole record pulls no punches, really. It's all pretty dismal.
Yeah, well, which, having known you for a few years, you're not a deep, dark, dismal guy.
I don't think of myself that way, no. I write from character like a lot of songwriters do, and I've just learned that the sinister, cynical, mean, depressed characters have more to say, which is often the case with normal, everyday people. Whenever I try and bottle the happy in love feelings, or man, what a beautiful day, I don't seem to be able to write anything with that. But if I just have one moment of someone cutting me off in traffic, that's a whole album of frustration. And it's not that I spend years thinking about whoever cut me off in traffic, but that minute is all it takes to exaggerate and make it work.
So where did you find those people? Where did they pop out of?
You know, I think all writers steal from everything around them. You know, I'm sure some of them are frustrations I had for a brief moment. Some of them are things my friends have told me about their problems, and then I steal them.
Are you always writing? Are you one of those people?
Every day.
Yeah.
I find that if I write every day, then I get to the good stuff faster. I don't think a good average in terms of what I write every day, most of it's bad. But if I take weeks off of writing, then it takes that much longer to get to the good stuff.
So I have friends of mine that are writers that I can tell when I'm talking to them. And I'm not talking about just like babbling incoherently, just blah, 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 blah. But if we're carrying on a conversation, I can tell when I've lost them because sort of the light just switches. And I don't know if it's sometimes I've said something or sometimes a dog has just run down the street or something's flashed on the television behind me, but they've just seen something and they're off and running with it. Does that happen to you too?
I would say that happens to me more with sounds, to where I need music at all times, really. I can't drive without it. I have trouble conversing sometimes if it's not playing in a restaurant or something, but it's also very distracting. So on the one hand, I need it as a sort of engine to keep things going, but I can also lose the thread of conversation very easily if Al Green comes on. Anything that's...
And it's not that it's necessarily inspiring you, it's just sort of letting your mind go?
It's inspiring. It's usually the timbres or the arrangements. When something comes on and the trumpets are recorded exceptionally well or exceptionally poorly, anything that makes it notable.
Have you always been like that since you were a little kid?
I don't think so, no. That was learned. That was part of my education in college, I think, was learning to arrange and compose things, and so now, and to record in a studio. And so now I'm just always thinking of sounds. And
does that change the way you listen to music, too?
Absolutely.
Does that take any of the joy out of it? Or?
Nope, it makes it better. I usually compare it to people who really know how cars work, how excited they can get about a new car or an old car. That's how recorded music and live music is for me, where it's the nuts and bolts of it. So maybe I'm listening to someone and not crazy about the lyrics to their song, but their guitar tone is perfect, or it's not perfect, but it's not perfect in such a great way, or that's a really terrible instrument they're playing, but somehow they're making it sound good. Those are all factors. It makes it hard to dislike music in that way, which has been a great advantage.
Oh, that's interesting, because as a layperson, you know, I'm not really in the business. Your first instinct would think if you know too much about it, it takes the joy out of it. But maybe you're looking at it in a totally beautiful way.
It's been the opposite for me, and I have my professors at college to thank for that, where they would come in and play tracks by bands that I would have always thought I didn't like, just by reputation, even without listening to much music, and they would show me something beautiful about the production or about the songwriting. And now it's difficult for me to find, not impossible, I should stress that, but difficult for me to find music that I just despise.
What was one of the bands that you were just sure that you would hate? I mean, it's kind of like Beats.
Tool.
You know.
Tool is one of the bands,
really?
or the side project, A Perfect Circle.
And just yet, on principle, you would have not liked it.
For some, I just... Yeah, I think so. I think what I had heard of it, I had heard when I was in middle school, and I decided it wasn't for me. And my theory professor came in and played us a perfect circle version of John Lennon's Imagine and talked about their approach to the cover and why they made those choices. And it was a pretty eye-opening experience for me, or ear-opening, I suppose.
Brain opening.
Yeah, now my brain certainly opened at that moment.
It's interesting because I'm not familiar with that. So now I'm going to have to go listen to that. And the next time I run into you, we can talk about it. Because
listen to it back to back with the Lennon version.
Okay. And now I'm really curious. Okay, that'll be my homework for tonight. Yeah, yeah. I'll have to go do that. Well, I think that, you know what, let's have another song, and then we'll talk a little bit about how you got here. And I'm not talking about by car.
Great.
And if you want to tell us anything about it, the song, that's fine, too.
Well, I was born and raised in Austin, Texas, and I went to school in New York. And I lived in Nashville for last year. But this song's about Leesburg, Virginia, where I have good friends, but have never really spent all that much time.
Despite being noble, you always were sad as a dog that can't find its way home. But I saw you smile back when you were a girl. Promised that I'd never leave you alone. We spent the summer at Eleanor's house, fishing for minnows and making up words. I broke a jar of honey on the kitchen floor, and your grandmother smiled ever so politely. I wanted to cry, but not around you. And I can't remember the things that we used to pretend in those days. But I hope that wherever you are, I'm on your mind always. And some say I'm wasting my time here by the windowsill. But I never knew better, and I don't think that I ever will. Pretend in those days, but I hope that wherever you are, I'm on your mind always. And some say I'm wasting my time here by the windowsill, but I never knew better. And I don't think that I ever will. My sister was chasing your grandmother's cat. Your brothers were building a house out of sticks. And us in the attic learning about lips. And you said you loved me, or something silly like that. And all my new friends friends are no friends at all, and they don't run around in the wind. And I still miss you like nobody's business, and I don't know how long it's been since we held hands down at Eleanor's house. And I promise never to leave you alone, and despite being noble, you always were sad as a dog that can't find its way home.
Curtis McMurtry is in the Roots studio today. Respectable Enemy is the name of his new CD. You know, you've never lived in Virginia, but I, for some reason, always associate Virginia with your family.
My father and grandfather lived there for a number of years.
And I told your dad that the first time I met him, and he looked really surprised, and then he admitted to me, oh, well, I went to prep school there. Mm-hmm. And I burst out laughing, and he kind of actually laughed at that, and that broke the ice a little bit. And we mentioned your dad, so we'll go back and do a brief history. We'll get this part out first. People might recognize your name, McMurtry, because they might know your father and your grandfather. Your
that
grandfather
happens.
Is Larry McMurtry, who is a well-known American writer.
National treasure.
Yes, a national treasure, and we're not exaggerating when we say that. And this show goes out around the world, and people are his books have been translated into many, many, many languages. People probably have read Lonesome Dove. I mean, that was, how many languages was that translated in?
And I couldn't tell
the
you.
The television show, I mean, you know, that show was Last Picture Show, and that has been, mm-hmm. that film was so well known, and countless other books. And your dad, James McMurtry, has been in here, and we know he goes around the world playing his songs. And despite that, you decide to go into the family business of words.
A lot of people do what their family does because it's familiar to them. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends whose their parents are engineers, and so they're becoming engineers. And I don't think that's because they feel a pressure to do that's expected of them. I think for the most part, it's because that world is familiar to them, mm-hmm. and they know what it entails. And I feel like my going into songwriting and writing in general, that's the reason, is I know I've grew up with my father, or around him, and I know what his life is like, and so that's what makes sense to me. Being an engineer wouldn't so much, but it might if my father were an engineer.
And I guess I met your grandmother once years ago at a show of your father's here, and
he's a great lady.
And well, she certainly has her way with words also.
Absolutely. She's a professor of Shakespeare, or recently retired. But.
And I was actually, she stopped me because I was sitting there at the club early. She got there early too. And I was reading a book, and she came over to inspect what I was reading and then started asking me some questions about it. I was reading a book of John Updike's short stories. She seemed to accept the fact that I was just reading it because I liked it. Although I was able to answer her questions about the story I was reading. And I felt like I was back in school and I had a quiz, but I passed eventually. And then I realized who I was talking to, because it's kind of click. Plus, she was wearing an I Love James McMurtry t-shirt, and that kind of gave it away. So you went into the family business, and your mother actually works with words now.
Yeah, she does. She teaches ESL.
Which is English to students, to people whom English is not their first language.
English as a second language. Mm-hmm. But she is an artist and always has been my entire life. She works with ceramic tiles primarily. Mm-hmm. And she has a much, I don't know, wider musical taste than my father does. She certainly introduced me to more music, or more different kinds of music, than he has, which people seem surprised to learn that sometimes. But I definitely learned about more different kinds of music from my mother than my father.
Well, I think sometimes if you're a working musician, that's your job, and you don't spend a lot of time listening to music.
I think you're right. I think he's living proof.
But he spends a lot of time doing other things, and you did those with him, too. I mean, he's a well-rounded guy. I mean, well, to some extent.
Plays guitar, writes songs, goes fishing,
hunts. Yeah.
Well-rounded.
Was a soccer dad for you.
Yeah, for a while.
When he had to be. And so you grew up in that atmosphere, and then you went off to college. You know, you were saying that you learned about music in school, but you went to a school that really wasn't, you didn't go to music school.
It wasn't a music conservatory, no. It's a liberal arts college, but there were certain advantages to that, because the faculty at Sarah Lawrence, when I attended it, were just top-notch music faculty, and really interesting as well. These weren't people that were going to teach you that Bach was the greatest thing that had ever happened to music. These were people that would teach you that maybe Webern might have been the best thing to have ever happened to music, that really dissonant 20th century composers were just as worthy of the canon as Beethoven. And you don't always get that at conservatories, especially if you're not majoring, if you're majoring in performance, which I was not. They kind of teach the giants of classical music as being the gods that they are. But I had a really great learning experience from people who were writing kind of fusions of punk and classical music, really jarring music for cellos and and trombones and baritone saxophones. And I don't think I would have got that had I gone to a music conservatory or even a school with a larger, better funded music program.
It had you in a place and a part of the country, too, which afforded you the opportunity to go out and hear a lot of different kinds of music.
Absolutely. Right next to New York it's pretty perfect for getting to see almost anything you could imagine seeing.
And then you played music through school also. You had bands going.
Yeah, I had a sort of, I don't know what we would call ourselves, dissonant folk band called Friendly Strangers throughout college. We wanted to be the Punch Brothers really badly, but no one will ever be the Punch Brothers. No one else will ever be that good. So we were about roughly the level of musicianship as the Strokes, maybe a little less so, and trying to be the Punch Brothers. So I don't think we succeeded in what we were aiming for, but we made something fascinating, I think.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad thing to do when you're in school. Mm-hmm. And so you gigged that way when you were at school. Did you have a band when you were back in Austin, too?
I did. I had a band called Curtis McMurtry and God's Chosen People. And that became sort of a parade music in a way. There were a lot of horns in that band, one point up to four or five horns.
Wow.
And I would mostly play banjo in that band at a certain point. And it took a lot of influence from King Oliver and Louis Armstrong's Hot 7 recordings. There should be a comma between them. King Oliver, comma, and Louis Armstrong's Hot 7 recordings. Yeah, there's a lot of Dixieland influence, but I was still, by that point, was already playing singer-songwriter stuff, but had trumpets and clarinets.
What else should you be doing when you're 19, 20 years old?
Oh, it was great. I don't regret it. I still might go back to that musical territory at some point, I hope.
I'm Catherine Cole. Curtis McMurtry is my guest this week. More live music and conversation is coming up. You are listening to Roots and Branches on the VOA Music Mix Network. Hello again from Washington. I'm Catherine Cole. This is Roots and Branches on VOA Music Mix. Curtis McMurtry is here with us this week. He told me he started writing the songs for Respectable Enemy when he was about 17 years old. Curtis is 24 now. My head just spins when I hear stuff like that. Curtis McMurtry, the song is called Ghost in My Bed on Roots and Branches.
And border towns, and I found myself a hole to hide away in. I'll keep the barman company until the devil comes for me. I don't believe in Jesus or salvation. Sometimes when it's too dark to see, I swear I hear you calling me, but I suppose it's my imagination. You're a voice in my head, you're a ghost in my bed, from a place that I left a long time ago, and no matter where I run, you won't let me go, let me go. Now I share my bed with another, and we never make love with the lights on. Her face never changes and all of her words sound the same. She's nothing like you, but she loves me, and her lips are warm in the darkness. Sometimes it's all I can do to remember her name. So hard to say, so easy to miss, the things we hide from those we kiss. Who's to say if I should feel ashamed? You're a voice in my head, you're a ghost in my bed, from a place that I left a long time ago. And no matter whose arms I hide in, you won't let me go, let me go. Searched the hills and border towns, and I found myself a hole to hide away in.
When you were a kid, when you were 15, 16, did you have bands going then too?
Yeah, I did. Mostly garage bands, punk rock, pop punk, things like that.
Were you writing then too?
I was. I was usually the primary songwriter in the bands I played in at that time, but it was a, I would say, more collaborative effort than the bands I've been in since.
And you grew up in Austin?
I did.
Was there a good music scene for teenagers?
Absolutely.
At that time?
Yeah, a lot of credit goes to a woman named Spike Gillespie for really organizing that. And there's a great scene for teenage bands right now, headed by William Graham. But before William came of age of 13 when he started playing out, Spike Gillespie would throw teen rock nights at really respectable venues. We got to play Antone's and Stubbs Barbecue and places that, it's kind of hard. You'd think it would be hard to get a gig if you were 12 or 13, but Spike set it all up.
Because it's
a great time.
Hard to get a gig when you're 35 or 40.
Yeah, it turns out it's actually harder to get a gig when you're 40 there than it is when you're 13.
Or even when you're 25, in many cases.
Yeah.
Do you think that you could have had that type of musical youth anyplace else?
Maybe. It's hard to tell. I wasn't a teenager anywhere else, and so.
Well, when you lived in Nashville, was there much of a scene for teens there?
That's a good question. You know, when I lived in Nashville last year, I wasn't in college. There wasn't a way for me to meet people my age, really. All the songwriters that I'd hung out with were a good bit older than me, and it was actually really difficult for me to meet people my age when I lived there.
And we should say that you're really just a couple years out of college right now. You're not...
I'll turn 24 in a few weeks.
Yeah, so that's pretty young on the scale still of being a touring musician.
Yeah, John Fulbright makes us all look like fools, so...
So Nashville for you was kind of like grad school.
That's how my father refers to it.
Oh, yeah? Oh, it's nice to know that your father and I are on the same page.
Yeah. He says I went to grad school there.
Because it gives you the chance to talk to people like Guy Clark or any of the great songwriters.
It did give me the chance to talk and co-write with Guy Clark, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. There's no way around that being just a tremendous experience.
Who else did you get to write with in Nashville?
I wrote with a guy named Fred Kohler, he's written with John Prine and John Hiatt and is a very accomplished songwriter on his own without them, but perhaps not as well known as all the Johns he writes with. I wrote with Doug Williams of the Americana duo Wild Ponies. Mm-hmm. He and I wrote a pretty fun song about murder.
Is it different for you writing, co-writing versus yourself?
It can be very uncomfortable. And I think you just have good ones and bad ones.
Mm-hmm. You can't know going in.
I had mostly bad ones, I think, in general. I have a certain reluctance to really throw out my best lines into something that may not go anywhere. You're always taking that chance when you do a co-write, because then you've shown someone something that you perhaps intend to use. And I have the complete wrong attitude about co-writing in general, I think, but I haven't been able to shake it quite. And I've had good co-writing experiences, and sometimes it can be really strange. It can be like a awkward first date where, you know, you've been put in contact with each other through other people, sent some emails, you go over to their house or they go over to yours, and you're expected to just make something in about 3 hours. And you usually can. You can usually make a song in 3 hours, but for me, it was usually not a good song. And it might have been a good song had we spent 5 hours or had we come back to it. But for a lot of people that do co-writing regularly, and that's the way that they really write songs, they're just seeing if they can do it in 3 hours. And the schedule is more important than the quality. That was really difficult for me.
Some people have said to me that this whole songwriting by committee business is difficult for them, too.
Yeah, I've never had to do that, but I know how it works. I have friends that do it. They get in sort of a conference room, and everyone throws out ideas and melodies, and people veto things really quickly. And it's fascinating. I don't think it's the wrong way to do it. I think they've proven it's the right way to do the kind of song they're writing. And I sort of thought I could go to Nashville and write some of those songs for fun or sarcastically, and it turns out I was really wrong about that. It's a completely different muscle. Takes a completely different set of skills and training. And the people that do it really believe in those songs, and that's what they love about it. And they are right to. They are amazing songs. But I can show them a Tom Waits or a Townes Van Zandt lyric, and it won't make any sense to them. They're not looking for the same thing out of songwriting that I think I am.
Well, let's have another example of your songs.
So this next song is the closest thing I have to a, I guess, title track on my new album, Respectable Enemy. The song is actually called Chaplin-esque, but that's where the album gets its title. As we make our meek adjustments, we never suspect that we don't understand, and we crumple up our passions in the palms of our hands. And we mass produce our fantasies to satisfy demands. And there is a place for people like us. And what a respectable enemy you turned out to be. And here I thought you were just a bad friend, though none of us chose to be cruel. I suppose when we have to, we all learn to bend. When we trust in constellations, we proudly admit that we made a mistake, and we muster disappointment with everything we make.
When the masquerade is over, we all put our faith in whatever makes a fragile thing feel safe. And what a respectable enemy you turned out to be. And here I thought you were just a bad friend, though none of us chose to be cruel. I suppose when we have to, we all learn to bend. Persistence with me. You know I don't want to be saved. And don't you see that we never grow up? We only get better behaved. Respectable enemy you turned out to be. And here I thought you were just a bad friend, though none of us chose to be cruel. I suppose when we have to, we all learn to bend. And there is a place for people like us.
The, as you said, sort of title track to Respectable Enemy, Chaplin-esque.
Where it gets its title.
Yes, yeah. Where it gets its title. Curtis McMurtry visiting with us today. So what was the timeline for this album? How long did it take you to get everything together?
It depends when you start measuring it. I thought about this album, I think, when I was 17, when I wrote that song, Chaplin-esque, when I just played.
You were 17 when you wrote that one.
It borrows heavily from Heart Crame. The first line, as we make our meek adjustments, is the first line of a Heart Crane poem called Chaplin-esque. Mm-hmm. Direct thievery there that I pretend is homage. And,
you don't have to pretend.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, and so I started thinking about this album then, some of the characters for it around that time. It took a little while to complete and find a way to release it.
When you talk about releasing it, I mean, you've put this out as a CD, you put this out as downloads. Did you do vinyl for this?
Nope.
When I go to shows, I see people really want to buy things.
Yes.
They want something in their hand, whether it's a t-shirt or a hat.
People at shows certainly want to buy CDs, so I'm glad that I have them.
Well, they want something immediate. Mm-hmm. But I think that when people come to see an artist, they want to show their support in some way. And I think the only way that they know how to do that is to purchase something.
Yeah,
care what it is.
I have friends that still, they make cassette tapes still, and people will buy them, even though Sony doesn't make cassette players anymore. They're out of production, but it's kind of awkward to go to a band and just hand them $10. That could be a strange thing, even if that's what you ultimately want to do. You want to support them. So it's nice to have the cassettes or CDs or download cards or t-shirts or
something,
whatever,
or anything.
Anything is, it's usually worth the money it takes to get that stuff made.
How did it feel to finally get this one after all that time in your hands?
Really relieving, because I had most of the songs for the next record written by the time I recorded this one, and so some of these songs I had been singing for years and years, and as much as they still held up, I feel like I had learned more theory since writing the songs, music theory that is. They're a little primitive in terms of where I hope to be going very soon, and in terms of some of the songs that are going on the next record.
Ah, so you're teasing us a little bit.
A little bit, yes.
And are you playing the new ones out yet?
Yeah, some of them.
Well, you can play a new one for us.
Yeah.
That's fine.
We'll do that.
Now that you're out with this one, it must be a relief to get this one up
and
out.
Yeah, it's great to finally have these songs out with the production and arrangement that I wanted for them.
Because I'm sure people were telling you what they expected from you along all along the way.
I think a lot of people expected me to sound a little more like my father, but we don't listen to a whole lot of the same music because, as I discussed earlier, he doesn't listen to a whole lot of music, and he would admit that. And on the one hand, he's more focused, and on the other hand, it cuts him off from a lot of things that I readily expose myself to. Classical music and jazz being a huge thing that I think he doesn't mean to ignore, but doesn't know how to make sense of it, and so he does.
It's interesting, though, talking to you every once in a while, your speech pattern is very much like his.
Really?
But not always, just your phrasing sometimes. And not a bad thing. It's an expected thing. I mean,
yeah.
I would expect you
people
to sound like your father. Yeah, I sound very much like my sister when we speak. She's a politician.
Just the same cadence.
They've heard her be interviewed somewhere, and they've said, you know, your voice is different. But if you had played three people and said, pick out your sister, they would know exactly who it was.
Nice.
And I said, well, that's kind of cool because I'm a big fan of her, so that's fine. Glad you picked the smart one out of the bunch. That's people can find out about you on your website, right?
They can, CurtisMcMurtryMusic.com.
And when they go there, what are they going to find?
They're going to find the list of shows. They'll find a short bio. They'll find a link to the Bandcamp, which has the album, and you can stream it there. And I prefer it if people do over Spotify. The album is on Spotify, but if you're not paying for Spotify, it means you're going to have to hear Nike's and Adidas ads in between the songs on the album if you stream it. So I would prefer that anyone that wants to listen to it stream it on Bandcamp if they're not going to buy it. I don't get any money if they stream it on Bandcamp, but you're not going to have to hear Nike ads. And I think the music is better without Nike ads in between it.
So rather than get
fractions of a penny every time someone spins a song, I would rather get nothing, but
have people hear it the way you intended.
Yeah, the tracks are in that order. There's not really supposed to be advertisements between them, so.
Let us hear another song.
Great.
Without a lot of talk in between.
Some would say I crossed a line. She put her lips up next to mine, and right then I forgot you were my friend. I did it for myself, you know I never meant to hurt you so, but I can't say I won't do it again. Ah, brother, don't you get so sore. I never meant to start a war. It's not my fault she loves me more than you. It's not a race unless I win. I know where her mouth has been. Believe me when I tell you I don't care. And anyway, she came to me. I never made her do a thing. You're a grown man, now it's time you learn to share. Ah, brother, don't you get so sore. I never meant to start a war. It's not my fault she loves me more than you. Well, I understand you're angry, but I don't want to fight you. You knew I was a snake, so of course I'm gonna bite you. Too many things to try between the soil and the sky. No one could ever keep me in a cage. You're not the only one I've wronged. I don't know what side I'm on, but you should know by now that I won't change. Ah, sister, don't you get so sore. I never meant to start a war. It's not my fault he loves me more than you. It is not my fault, he loves me more than you. It's not my fault, he loves me more than you.
We're visiting with Curtis McMurtry today. His first CD is called Respectable Enemy, and you can get all the information about it on his website, which is CurtisMcMurtryMusic.com. Do you ever feel the need to write prose, short stories, or movie script, or a book, or anything?
I do not. none of the above. Maybe movie script.
Something out of one of your songs, or?
No.
Because some of those characters, I mean, they could walk off the CD and onto the screen.
Appreciate that. I'll leave that to somebody else.
Art, you want to jump into your mother's footsteps? And
man, I've always been a terrible visual artist, and
yeah,
every attempt at that, half-hearted attempt, I should say.
I like on your CD cover.
I appreciate it. My good high school, well, I guess we became friends in middle school. Mm-hmm. My good friend Megan Anderson did the art, and then my college friend Max Mamus did the design for the
record. Max, who also plays the accordion.
Who also plays the accordion.
Yes. Tried to teach me how to play the accordion.
It
was harder
more difficult
than it looks.
Yeah, it's a tricky instrument for sure.
Heavier than it looks, too.
Very much so. Yeah.
I did want to ask you, there is one cover on the record, and by that I mean not the artwork, but it's one of your dad's songs.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you made your own version of it. Was that a tough decision to sing one of his songs?
Not at all. And I've actually, the song is Gulf Road. Mm-hmm. It's on his record, Saint Mary of the Woods. And he's never played it live, and for him, that track was filler, and to me, it's one of the best songs he's ever written, and I've been playing it out since I was in high school. So I've performed it hundreds of times, and he never has. So at this point, it still feels like more my song, which I know is strange, but it fits really well on the record because it's been part of my set for so long.
It sounds like it could be your song.
Appreciate it.
And we'll play that off the record.
I'll just steal it from him then. Well, mine now.
We won't tell him.
He left it alone too long.
Not a hot cup of coffee. No cold glass of tea ever crossed your lips in my company. Straight bourbon whiskey was all we'd buy. So let's not hold back now. We got nothing to hide. So much we savor, yet so much we missed. You know I never meant you to see me like this. Just a faint distant flicker from the last of the storm. Now a taste of that liquor could do me no harm. Light me a candle. Light me a fire. Come sit by the window. Best of intentions to the worst of desires. Leave by the Gulf Road in the gray dawn. Take a short-handled shovel. Take a long-handled hoe. Cover my bones when the west wind blows. Smooth it off even. Pack it down hard.
Curtis McMurtry, I thank you for coming by to talk about Respectable Enemy, and I hope you'll come by to talk about all your new songs in the next record, whenever that comes out. Do you have a timetable for it?
Hoping to record it in May. We shall see how that, if I'm able to stick to that or not.
All right. But, well, come by anytime. You don't need a new record.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the program and my visit with Curtis McMurtry this week. As always, I look forward to your comments. The email address is roots@voa.gov. That is roots@voa.gov. I'm Catherine Cole. This is Roots and Branches on the VOA Music Mix Network.
თავისუფლება. უსმინეთ ჩვენს პროგრამებს სადავო საკითხებზე.
ეს იგი როზა ლუქსემბურგის ოცნების შრომის კოდექსში არის შესული.
სინამდვილეში ეს არის ქართული ოცნების ამორჩეულთა საოცნებო შრომის კოდექსი.
და გადაცემებს საკითხებზე, რომლებზეც მოქალაქე და უმრავლესობა თანხდება.
ჩვენ გვინდა საქართველოში აბავშიროთ ევროპული ტიპის დემოკრატია.
ევროკავშირსა და ნატოში ინტეგრაცია არის ჩვენი სტრატეგიული არჩევანი.
რადიო თავისუფლება. ობიექტური მაუწყებლობის